Hello and welcome to the Mr. Brown podcast, where I reflect on my journey as an early career teacher, with a special focus on mental health. I am your host, James Brown. Salutations. Easter at last. It's been a long old half term. Well, objectively speaking, it hasn't. It was only a 5-weeker. But these 5-weekers seem to be very punchy. They seem to last an awful long time. And this half term involved something that was rather stress inducing at the time, something which involved a judgment, which is yet to be made official. So I'm not going to discuss it just yet, but a few episodes down the line, I will discuss the couple of days that happened this half term, which resulted in a judgment for my school. But yes, the half term has felt like a long one. I have my theory as to why these short half terms seem to last so long. I think part of the reason is because when the half term is short, it's barely begun before we've already started to look forward to the next break. Whereas when it's a really long half term, a 7 or an 8 weeker, God forbid, the next break just seems beyond the horizon. There's no point in looking forward to it. It's just too far away. You might as well just strap yourself in, settle down, and come to peace with the fact that this is the way life is going to be for the next 7 or 8 weeks. And none of this is to say that I don't enjoy term time. I love term time. I love my job. But it's tiring. And so I do look forward to a rest during the breaks. In fact, I may have discussed it once before on the podcast, when I first became a teacher, and I would regularly exchange pleasantries with colleagues. And the first thing most teachers seem to say when exchanging pleasantries is, oh, it's only X days until the weekend or until the break, or can't wait to get through this day. And I used to think, well, if that's your attitude, why are you doing it at all? How naive I was. I've now come to learn that you can love your job with a passion and still at the same time very much look forward to the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the term just because it is so tiring. In fact, I feel that when you do love something with such a passion, you pour more of yourself into it. It is more draining. And so you do need those rests and those breaks. And I've got 2 weeks now, which is wonderful. That felt like a rather meandering opening. Let's try to tighten things up a little bit. There are 2 things I'd like to discuss with you today. The first is a TLR. That's a teaching and learning responsibility. It's kind of like a promotion. I was encouraged to apply for the personal development role in post 16 at my school, and indeed I did apply, was interviewed, and have been offered the position, which is very exciting. I've asked for Easter to think about it, to think about whether I want to take on the role. Now, I'm very passionate about personal development. In fact, I'd say I get more excited about personal development and character development than I do about teaching and learning. By that, I mean subject curricula. I'm less excited about that sort of thing than I am about character development. So this role is right up my street. And I think it would be great as well in post 16 because you spend a lot of time working with children in schools, obviously, yet rarely do you get a sense of resolution. Rarely do you see what your hard work and their hard work culminates in. But in post 16, it's the springboard off into wherever students are going next, whether it's university or elsewhere. And so you do get that rare sense of resolution, which is often lacking elsewhere in the profession. So it would be nice to watch as students take those next steps. I think that would be very satisfying and rewarding. So why then have I asked for 2 weeks to contemplate whether I want to take on the role? Well, I'm worried about workload. I'm acutely aware that the number one reason why teachers quit is workload. I'm doing a master's alongside my teaching, so I already have quite a lot to do. And I'm worried about taking on too much and finding myself in a position where I'm really struggling to keep my head above water. I worry that that would lead to a situation where I start to resent being a teacher, and I don't want that to happen. So I am worried about workload. I've expressed this concern to the teachers, the senior leaders who would like to have me in this role. And one of their responses was to say, trust us. It'll be fine, trust us. Now, these teachers, who are far more experienced than I, do believe that I would do very well in the role, and I'm very flattered by that. And so I was wondering, how much weight should I give that fact in my considerations about whether to actually take the role? So these are teachers who know far more about workload and teaching than I do, and they think, knowing me, that I'd be really good at this. I have my doubts. So how should I weigh their expert opinions against my opinion? Also, they're far more familiar with the demands of the role, whereas I'm more familiar with my capacity to deal with increases in workload. So neither of us has the full picture, in a way. They know more about the role. I know more about me, I think. And so it's hard to make a decision. So I will be deliberating about this for the next couple of weeks. And something else to factor in, I think, is that taking on more work wouldn't necessarily result in me feeling like I had a much heavier workload. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that it depends on the nature of the work. So if I take on work which I feel energizes me and motivates me and aligns with all my values, then surely the work would feel easier. However, if I took on the same amount of work but doing something that didn't particularly interest me or excite me, then that would feel like a real drag. So there's lots to think about. There's lots to think about. I'd be interested to hear your opinions. To what extent should I trust these senior leaders who've told me to trust them when it comes to taking on this role regarding workload? And what have been your experiences when taking on additional responsibilities? I'd be very interested to hear. Now, there's one other thing I'd like to mention. It's not going to be a long episode today. One other thing I'd like to mention, but before that, my usual Patreon plea. So this episode took around 2 hours to produce, and I aim to produce 2 episodes a month. So that's around 4 or so hours a month of work that I put into this podcast. If you think that that work is worth at least the price of a coffee, so that's £2 to £3, then please consider signing up on Patreon and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. It doesn't cost a lot, but any contribution would be greatly appreciated. And if you do sign up, you'll have exclusive early access to videos of my recording sessions. As always, the link is in the show notes. Thank you. Now, the next thing I'd like to discuss is mentoring. I had a very rewarding experience with my trainee recently. She was struggling, as many trainees do, and indeed as many fully qualified teachers do, especially in schools like mine. She was struggling with behaviour management. She's fairly softly spoken. I personally think that this is a strength when used in the right way. I used to try to raise the level of my voice to the level of noise in the room, and I was forever losing my voice. That wasn't healthy at all. Then I saw some more experienced teachers speaking in a far softer, quieter way. And in fact, I found that in those lessons, students would lower their volume so that they could hear what the teacher was saying. So she is softly spoken, but like I said, I think that that can be a strength. But it has resulted in times where she has issued an instruction to the class to be silent, perhaps, and it might not have been heard by all, and the class hasn't responded as she would have wanted. Namely, they've carried on making noise, carried on with their conversations, which can be disheartening. There have been times, especially towards the beginning of the year, where on the behaviour management front, I would step in because I wanted my trainee to be able to focus on her, on the teaching and learning side of things and not have to worry about behaviour quite so much. But recently, I've tried to step back. I will do some active mentoring in the lessons. I'll give her some pointers, but I think it's the appropriate time for my trainee to start doing more of the behaviour management side of things herself. So I didn't immediately come to the rescue, but I can still see how it's disheartening to issue an instruction and for the class not to follow it as you would like. We spoke about this in a mentor meeting, and my advice was that after issuing a general instruction to the class, if the class doesn't follow the instruction, you must then pick out individuals and say something along the lines of, "Michael, I've just asked everyone to be silent. You're still talking. That's a C1. So you've gone from issuing a general instruction to the class now to speaking to individuals. And it should indeed be those individuals who have ignored the general instruction most egregiously. Those who are still making the most noise after asking the class to be silent. And I find that if you can silence those few epicenters of noise, there's always a few students who make more noise than everyone else. And there'll be other students who sit within a certain radius of the especially noisy student who will make their own noise and know that it will get swallowed up by the especially noisy student at the epicenter. So if you can silence those epicenters, then that can have a profound effect on the level of noise in the room. This was my advice. After issuing a general instruction, if it hasn't been followed, then target individuals. Anyway, she had a go at this. I wasn't in the room at the time because, sadly, on Wednesday, I was poorly. It's the first day off I've had due to sickness since I've become a qualified teacher. But anyway, I wasn't in on Wednesday, so I wasn't in the room with her. But she sent me an email afterwards telling me how it went. And she deployed this strategy, and she was delighted with the results. And when I read the email, I was surprised at how much that meant to me as her mentor. It made me very, very happy to learn that I had advised her to try a particular strategy. She did. And it worked. I'm delighted because I think that will make her feel more competent as a teacher. And you know what? It makes me feel more competent as a mentor as well. And I'd say that was receiving that email was the highlight of my day on Wednesday. I mean, I was poorly. The bar had been set pretty low. But even if I had been at school, that would have still been a highlight. And I remember speaking before about the value of trainees. I was very sceptical and cynical about trainees when I first became one. I just felt like a burden in the classroom, a burden to be put up with for the sake of the continuation of the profession. And I was told by a much more experienced teacher at the time that that couldn't be further from the truth, and in fact that trainees have great value, and I've experienced that firsthand recently. There's something very rewarding about helping a trainee teacher to become a better teacher. And that's it for today. If you're not on your Easter break already, then it must be approaching soon. And I hope it's a very restful break. I won't record an episode now for, 3 weeks or so, just to give us all a bit of a break. But I hope you have a good Easter, and I very much look forward to checking in again soon. Please let me know your thoughts on anything you've heard on this episode of the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word in person and on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Brown Pod or email mrbrownpod@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate and review in your directory of choice. Please also consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/mrbrownpod and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. Thank you, and talk again soon.